Okay, so we were seeing yesterday on the wide lines that on various occasions the Torah tells us there's a certain process or process, you would say, I guess. But the right way of saying it is, of course, process. So if there's a certain process that needs to be undertaken, whether it's to put somebody to death or skila or goel hadam and all these things, so the Torah gives you, as it were, the instructions, the recipe of how to go about it. And the question is every instruction there li'ikuva, or rather it's just a mitzvah lechatchila? So we saw in the final analysis that with regard to skila, so there we maintain that it's absolutely li'ikuva. If the Torah says that the Edom have to go first, it means the Edom have to go first. And if they can't, you actually don't put him to death. There were two exceptions to that, the Goel Hadam and the Roitzeach in Beis Din. The Roitzeach in Beis Din, even though he has to be killed by sword, but if you can't, then you'd even throw something at his boat to kill him. The Goel Adam has to be killed by the relative. If you can't, then we would send somebody else to kill him. But if you remember, that was the famous rule of Shnei Ksuvim Haboim Ke'echot, two psukim that come together. If there's a double example, then we assume that those are exceptions to the rule. That's what we're up to at the moment. So let's have a look. We did see one other case, which was the Seira Umaira. The Seira Umaira, there's many, many, many requirements. The parents cannot be deaf or blind or mute or lame. And we said, yes, those are really li'ikuva, but over there, at least we have a special pasuk. So have a look at the Gemara. We are on about the 10th wide line. The first word on that line is k'deksiv. K'deksiv. Says the Gemara, Toshima, Ein lo rochoiv. This is now talking about a different subject completely. This is talking about an ir hanidachas. There's a little star in the margin, and it sends you all the way towards the end of the Masechta, right at the end of the Masechta, right at the end, almost the last daf, in fact, not quite. Last daf is Kuf Yud Gimel, and this is Kuf Yud Beis. There it's talking about the Ir HaNidachas. It's Hashem, we should all be Zoicha in good health to be able to learn the Masechta together and get to Kuf Yud Beis together. In Kuf Yud Beis, the discussion there is the Ir HaNidachas. Now, as we know, the Ir HaNidachas is the town in which everybody, or at least most people, are serving Avodah Zarah. They are all put to death. Every single last one of them, men, women, and children, are all put to death. That is the halacha of Ir HaNidachas. Now, the lashon of the pasuk is the Torah talks about taking them into the rechoiv, into the street. And the question is, once again, is that literal? It says you've got to take all, not the people, all the plunder, all the booty into lashon pasuk. El toich rechava, into the street. So once again, we have a question now: is that literal, or meaning is it leikuva? Obviously, it is literal, but is it leikuva, or it's lechatchila? With the difference being, what happens if rechava, by the way, may not be the street; it may be like a town square, as it were. So now, what happens if you have a town that doesn't have a rechava? So if we were to say, and this is back to our discussion, if we were to say that the instructions in the pasuk are le'ikuvah, so you've got to take all the plunder into a town square, well, then it would follow. If there is no town square, then you just simply cannot be mekayim this din. If you were to say that, no, it's lechatchila, that means if there is a town square. But if there is no town square, well, then you wouldn't. So have a look. The Gemara brings a machlokes by us. Toshema. Ein lo rechoiv, if there is no town public square. So the first opinion says, Ein nasis ir hanidachas. Well, then the whole process of ir hanidachas would no longer be applicable. Because if the Torah says it's got to take place in the town square, then the assumption is it has to have happened, whatever reason, in the town square. And if there isn't one, you can't do the whole din. That's the first opinion. Divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Akiva says that what? Ein lo rechoiv, oisin lo rechoiv, oisin lo rechoiv. If there is no town square, you jolly well make one. Says the Gemara, what do I see? Ad kan loy pligi. We see that what is the discussion? Everybody holds that you've got to have a rechovah. There's no disagreement about that. Everybody holds that you've got to have a rechovah, and if there's no rechov, then there's no halacha of ir ani dachas. That everybody agrees to. So what's the only discussion? Must it be a town square that existed from the outset, or can you build one quickly now? But nobody says, well, it's only a din l'chatchila, and if you don't have one, it doesn't matter. That nobody said. That's what the Gemara points out now. Ad kan loy pligi. Where do we find they're disputing each other? Elo demar sova. One opinion holds, rechovo demi ikora bo'inon. A rechovah demi'ikara means it's got to have been there from the beginning. You can't now build it now. Umar sova na rechovah, even if you put it there now, nami kedemi ikara domi, that's as good as had it been there from the outset. Aval de kula alma, but everybody agrees. Bo inon kra kedeksiv. But everybody says you require the pasuk to be carried out exactly as it's written. And if the Torah writes that you have to have a rechov, then you jolly well have to have a rechov. So this would seem to suggest, again, we had a machlokes before. When the Torah talks about a certain process being carried out, is every detail there li'ikuva or it's only a mitzvah? So over here, it would seem to be quite clear that it's absolutely le'ikuvah. There's just a discussion, can you implement a rechov now? But nobody says that the rechov is not le'ikuvah. Says the Gemara in the final analysis, you know something? Tanoihi. We'll just have to accept that indeed it's a machlokes tanoim. It's a machlokes tanoim. So we've been debating this way and that way. We seem to have a raya's lekan or lekan. The bottom line is it's a machloikas tanoim. Machloikas tanoim. Why? So now we move over to a completely different discussion, but it's the same yesod. The Tanan ein loy boyhen yad or boyhen regel or oizen yemonis. Who's this talking about? Does anybody know? It's talking about the Metzora. The halacha is that somebody has tzaraas. So at the end of the process, again, we're talking about a certain process of tahara. How will he become pure once again? So part of the process is you've got to put the dam of the karbonis on boyhen yad and boyhen regel. Boyhen yad, boyhen regel, I think, is like the thumb or the big toe. Oizen Yemonis on his right ear. With the question being, it's true that the Torah says that's what you're supposed to do, and what happens if he doesn't have one? He doesn't have a Boyin Yad. He doesn't have a Boyin Regel, or he doesn't have an Oizen Yemonis. Says the Gemara, Ein loy tahara oilomis. Says the Tanakhama, he can never ever become Tahir. So the Tanakhama is clearly saying that what? That if the Torah gives us instruction about how to carry out a process, then every detail is le'ikuvah. You've got to put the dam on his boyin yodo, and if he doesn't have one, well, then he's stuck. So he's going to remain tomei forever. But Rebbe Elazar Omer, no. Noisein al makomai v'yotzei. Rebbe Elazar has a slightly different opinion and says, you put it on that same place. So if he doesn't have a boy in Yodo, whatever he has in that goof, you put it in that area. Reb Shimon Oimer, Noisen al Smoiloi, the Yotze. So you put it on the left one. So there it is. A machloikas, once again, another example, nothing to do with Mises Bezdin, nothing to do with Goel Hadam, nothing to do with Irani Dachas, nothing to do with Seira or Moira, but it's the same Yesoid. The Torah over here is listing out a process. Here it's the process of purification of the Metzora. And the Torah says quite clearly the dam has got to be sprinkled on the right toe. One opinion says if he has no right toe, well, then he's stuck and he's going to be Tomei forever. And the other one says, no, put it on the left. So we see quite clearly that this whole discussion turns out to be Machlokes Tanoim. We mustn't chas v'shalom make a mistake. You know, I was thinking when I was preparing this Gemara on Shabbos, what a dangerous Gemara this is. What would the reform movement say about this Gemara? When the Torah says something, well, if it doesn't work out, then do something different. So maybe if the Torah says shake a lulav, say, but don't shake a lulav, you can always shake a banana, it's also okay. Put on tefillin on your left hand. If not, then put it on your leg, that's also okay. So obviously that's a tremendous tos, and that's apikoresis. That's not the discussion. And that's why I've been stressing the whole time that this is a discussion with regard to a process, not a particular mitzvah, how you do a mitzvah. There's a process of misa, a process of Ve'ani Dachas, a process of Taharas HaMetzora, a process of Aseira Umaira. But nobody will say, well, you're supposed to have black tefillin. And if you've run out of black ink, well, then you could do pink as well. That's also all right. No, chas v'shalom. That's not a process. That's a prat of a mitzvah. And it's got to be black. And if you don't have black, then you don't have tefillin. Simple as that. Okay, so that ends the discussion. And with that, we
Maybe
move
just a
on. Yes.
kasha. It just made me think of it yesterday when we were learning this. If someone loses an arm or a hand for tefillin,
Yes, it's
do they switch hands? Or if they lost a whole arm?
yes, I think not. I would have to double check. I'd have to double check, to be honest. It's a Sifa Shulchan Aruch in Lamed Gimel or Lamed Dalet. I'd have to check. I'd have to check.
And we looked up in the Mishnah this case. It said it paskins like the Tana Kama that he would be a Metzora forever.
Right. So it would seem to be that we pass it out of the Man d'Omah that if that's what it says in the Torah, then every prat is le'ikuvah. Just with regard to your Shaila, let me just have a very, very quick look. It's in the Shulchan Aruch in Chof Zayin. The Ramah says in the in Siman Chof Zayin, Reb Nachum, Gideim, like you said, if somebody does not have a hand, She'ein lo yad, rak zeroya, yaniach b'loy brocha. Says the Mishnah Berurah there, Ve'im ein lo yad smoil bichlal. Means the first case was he doesn't have a hand, but he has the arm. But if he has no left hand at all, Potter melaniach ashel yad af biyamin. He does not put the tefillin on the shel yad, but then he brings that yesh machmirim b'loy bracha.
This is if someone had an accident during their life and lost the
Right,
limb.
so now he's got no hand. So again, according he brings a Ramah. The Ramah says that he would not put on tefillin shel yad bichlal, but some say that he would put on the right hand, not his left, but then he would do so without a bracha. Rabbi Liol David, do you remember? I'm not sure if it was in your times in the Groshul, a yid called Reb Shmuel Shtimla.
I remember him very well.
You do remember him?
Oh, yes. He would speak on Tisha B'Av. He was a Holocaust survivor.
Yeah.
He would speak on Tisha B'Av as to what his experiences were. His,
So
he.
on one Tisha B'Av, he spoke in the Groshul, maybe he spoke on more than one occasion, but I remember one particular occasion. He was in the death camps. I thought it was in Auschwitz death camp, but I once said over this story, and his wife was there. I'm not sure if his wife is still alive. She moved to Kiryat Seif, I believe. And
She
she
is
corrected.
still alive, as far as I know.
Okay, Shana. So I think she corrected me. I think she thought it wasn't Auschwitz, maybe it was Bergen-Belsen. But Al Kaponim, Reb Shmuel Shtimla was a very, very precious Yid who survived the camps and built up a family in America. And then he retired together with his wife to Eretz Yisrael. They lived in Bet Shemesh until he passed away maybe 10 years ago or so. So on that Tisha B'Av, he spoke about his war experiences. But one particular story he did not say in public. But afterwards, I spoke to him and he told me a very, very, very moving thing. He told me, Rabbi Leo Dobit, I wonder if you've ever heard this from him. He said to me that he was a young man arrested and taken from home, and he had very, very little personal assets when he was in the ghetto or whatever it was. As far as I remember, he told me he had a bit of money. He had a few photographs that he took with him to remember what his family looked like, and he had his tefillin. And he was moisa nefesh to make sure that he had those three things at all times, until eventually he got taken to the camps. And there they took everything from him. And they put on the famous, prisoner of war concentration camp clothing. And everything was taken, the money, the photographs, and for him, the most painful, the tefillin. So he told me, incredibly, that he puts on these trousers, the pants, and the jacket, the famous jacket that we all know what it looks like. And as he put on the jacket, which he knew tragically had obviously been worn already by some previous inmate who was no longer Ba'olam HaEmes, as he put on the jacket, he felt something in the pocket. And he dared not put his hand there to see what it was. He didn't want to take it out in front of the Nazi guards, Yimach Shemom. He found himself a quiet corner. He slips his hand into the pocket and he takes out. He sees it's a tefillin shel rosh. That's what he told me. There in the camps, he took out a tefillin shel rosh, a tefillin shel rosh. He said there was a whole discussion. He members in the camps discussing with the other people, what's the halacha? They didn't have a tefillin shel yad. Give a tefillin shel rosh, you make one bracha, you make two brachas. There was a whole halachic discussion there in the camps. But it was an incredible story, besides for the very moving nature of the story. But this is very much in Yonah D'Yoma. This is the whole Nes of Chanukah, where we light the candles in the Choshech. A person, every single one of us, go through periods of Choshech in our life, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends us, amidst the Choshech, a ray of light. A ray of light. And I think the source, the first time perhaps that we find this, we read this actually on Shabbos morning. When Yosef HaTzadik is being taken down to Mitzrayim, everything looks dark, everything looks gloomy, everything looks black. His mother has passed away. He's now been separated from his father. His brothers want to kill him. He's on a way to being sold to an Eved. He's going to Mitzrayim. It couldn't be more bleak. And we all remember the famous Rashi. Rashi says that on the wagon with the Arabs, HaKadosh Baruch Hu organized miraculously that there should be pleasant smelling besomim. With the obvious question being, how on earth does that help his situation at all? What are we going to tell him? Your mother passed away. You might never see your father again. Your brothers want to kill you. You're being sold as a slave, but the good news is there's a nice smell. That doesn't really help his situation. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, a beautiful yesod. Rabbi Yehuda David, you'll remember, maybe you'll remember, I used to learn every morning with Ramosha Zelig, Zichrona Livracha. I used to learn with him the Sefer Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, Sichas Musa. So I learned this together with him. And since he's passed away, every Sunday evening, I give a share now to his wife and to all of his children over America. And this is, in fact, the shmooze that we learned just last night with all his children present. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz says the beautiful Yesod. His situation did not improve whatsoever, but that wasn't the purpose of this Nes. The purpose of this Nes was as a reminder to Yosef that even in the darkness, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is still with you and hasn't abandoned you. Yosef's situation is no easier now. He also still does not understand why HaKadosh Baruch Hu has done this, but he clearly feels in the beautiful Lashon of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, he feels a neshika. He's just received a kiss from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There amongst the darkness, there in the most bleak, darkest, black moments, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him, I'm right here with you. And that was the inyan of the Besomim. That was the inyan of the Besomim. So I very much feel that that was the tefillin that Reb Shmuel Zecheinu Levracha was zeicher to find. I think it was in Bergen-Belsen death camp. There in the midst of the camp where everything's been taken away from him, he has no idea whether he'll survive, what about his family, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends him a tefillin shel rosh, right there in the Gehenim on earth, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu remembered him, Kavi Yochel, and sent him a tefillin shel rosh, and that for him was a tremendous, tremendous chizuk. Rabbi Eliyahu Dovid, did you ever hear that story from him about the tefillin?
I never heard that story from him, no.
No, it's an incredible story. It's an incredible story.
Rabbi.
Yes, Rabbi Larry.
Rabbi Moshe Weinberger's father was in Mauthausen, and he's told his son a number of times that he never felt as close to Hashem as he did in the camps, even though it was the worst thing ever, and he has had a great life since he came out, but he never again will ever 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 feel the dveikus he felt when he was in the such a shol tachtis like that.
We should never be tested, and we don't really have a way of fathoming what they went through. None of us, even the older members here, were not alive during the war. We have no idea what they faced, but yes, we get chizuk from their emunah and bitachon ad hayom hazeh. The Kloisenberger Rebbe, any story about the Kloisenberger Rebbe just sends a shiver up the spine. The Kloisenberger Rebbe lost his wife and 11 children in the war. And he incredibly rebuilt his own life and the lives of thousands of Hasidim right there by you, Larry, in Netanya. As we know, in Kiryat Sanz, he built Laniada Hospital, amongst other things, built up a town in America. And I once heard that on Yom Kippur, in the camps, he was in Auschwitz. Yud Hamet was in Auschwitz. And none of them could daven because obviously they didn't have a machzor there. So they all came to the Rebbe and he davened with them. He knew the davening off by heart. So they went through the Al Chaitz on Yom Kippur. And we know the Al Chait goes through one by one, the Aleph to Tov, Aleph base. And he read the first one, Al Chait Shechotanu Lefonech Be'imut Salev. And he said, this does not apply to us. Imut Salev means that we're being stingy. Nobody's stingy over here. We don't have anything. Next, Al Chait Shechotanu Lefonech. And he went through one by one, doesn't apply to us, doesn't apply to us, doesn't apply to us. Nobody did Gezel, and nobody did Ritzicha, nobody did Arroyas, and nobody did Gaiva, and nobody did, none of these apply to us. And at the end, he said to them, but there's one Al Chait that maybe we do all have to say collectively, and that is, Al Chait Shechotanu Lefonecho, maybe we lost, to an extent, our emunah and bitochin here in the camps. So that's too mind-blowing to possibly fathom, but when it was coming from the Rebbe, they took his Musa, that even there, like you said, in the Sho'el Tachtis, you know, he maintained high standards of emunah and bitochin.
You know that the first Shabbos, it said about him that the first Shabbos after Auschwitz, after the liberation, he broke down and he had the worst time of all the years in the camps. It was the worst ever because he had convinced himself, I guess through Ruach HaKodesh or whatever, that at the end of all this, Mashiach himself was going to come and save them. And when it was just the Russian army and there was no Mashiach and no big, you know, his orus afterwards, life just was supposed to go on. He collapsed from depression. He could not believe that he banked this whole time of how am I going to get through because Mashiach, and then it was just a regular Shabbos.
Incredible, incredible. I recently bought actually a book for my wife about the Tzanzer Rebbe, the Kloisenberger Rebbe. She read it cover to cover. She said it's just the most mind-boggling book. It's just phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal. Okay. Let's make a start, Meirav Raboisai. The next Mishnah, Kol HaNiskolin. So we've now gone through the whole process. We've literally gone stage by stage. We've seen the trial. We've seen the conviction. We've seen the vidui. We've seen now literally the stoning, and this person has now been put to death. So surely it's all over. No, there's one more stage. What is that? Says the Mishnah, Kol HaNiskolin Nitlin. Anybody who's stoned also has to be hanged. His body is hanged in public. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. The Chachamim Oimrim, that no, say the Chachamim, Einoi Nitla Elo Hamagadef, V'ho'oived Avodah Zarah. We'll see this is quite a complicated limud in the Gemara. But no, not everybody who is stoned is necessarily hanged, but rather only a Megadef. What is a Megadef? Rashi says, first Rashi on the Mishnah, Elo Megadef, Mavorech Es Hashem. We know that actually it's the opposite. It's really Makalil Es Hashem, but we don't want to use that in the context of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Therefore, we politely, as it were, say Mavorech Es Hashem. But of course, it means the opposite. Ubegemara Mefarish Tam. Okay, so we'll not pursue that yet. Rashi warns us that the Gemara will tell us why indeed, for some reason, this is different. Not everybody who is stoned is hanged, but somebody who's a Megadef, number one. Number two, of Oyved Avodah Zarah, says the Mishnah, they too are stoned. Now, obviously, we do see there's some connection between a Megadef and Oyved Avodah Zarah. Clearly, they're both very similar averas of absolutely rejecting and rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But nonetheless, we'll see in the Gemara a complicated limud of where do you see that these two are stoned. Says the Gemishnah, Ha'ish, Toilin, Oisai, Ponov, Klape, Ha'om. If it's a man, then he is hanged with his face facing the people. But V'ho'isha, Poneho, Klape, Ha'itz. So she's also hanged on a tree, but she's not facing the people, she's facing the tree. Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. V'chachomim oimrim, ho'ish nitle, ve'ein ho'isha nitlis at all. We've had in the previous Mishnah, remember the discussion on the previous Omud about the taking off the clothes before the skila, is there a difference between a man and a woman? Here we have another machloikas, a similar one. Is the woman hung at all, presumably for reasons of tznius? So the opinion of the Chachamim is that a woman is not hung at all. Even if she has to be stoned, she is stoned, but she's not hanged. Says the Mishnah, Omar Lohem Rabbi Lozo. Rabbi Lezer. So Rabbi Lezer said to the Chachamim, I don't understand. How can you possibly say that the woman who's stoned is not hanged? V'haloi, but surely we have a story that suggests otherwise, because it says Shimon ben Shetach tolo noshim ba'ashkeloin. He hanged women in Ashkelon. So you see quite clearly that we have a maisa over here that you do hang women. Amruloi, so they responded, that was an exception. Shmoinim Noshim Tolo. He hanged 80 women on one day, even though Ve'ein Donim Shnayim B'Yoyim Echot. Normally the halacha is, and we're going to discuss this, Rashi makes mention of it here, we'll see in the Gemara also. Normally you don't judge, you don't carry out the death penalty twice on the same day. And here he did so to 80 of them. So you see that this didn't fit in with the regular rules anyway. This clearly was exceptional circumstances, and that's why he was able to kill more than one on one day. And if it was exceptional circumstances, then again, then that would explain also why he killed these 80 Noshim, but it's no proof that under regular circumstances you could hang Noshim, says Rashi. Ein donin shnayim b'yom echod, be'bezdin echod. One Bezdin cannot carry out a death sentence or even paskin a death sentence twice on one day. Mishum deloy motzi lahafuchi bezechuse de kol chad v'chad. You cannot now look for zechusim. As we learned, ba'arichus, the main job of a Bezdin when paskining a death sentence is to try and find the zechus. There's no way that we can be fully focused on finding a zechus if we're busy, as it were, with two cases on the same day. To kol chad v'chad, everyone, sorech levakish, rayas lemisa zu, ulemisa zu. Now, says Rashi, but Gemara Mefarish, that it depends exactly what we're talking about. That's only if it's the b'shtei averois ka'omar, if it's two separate cases, not that two people have been convicted with the same type of avera. rather two separate averis. It really is two completely separate cases. Then de ein rayoisehoin shavois. So then the proofs are not the same. So we cannot be focused on two cases simultaneously. V'shimon ben shetach sho'o hutzrucho lekach. The sho'o, the time, needed it. It was a special, what we call a hiro'as sho'o. It was exceptional circumstances. Sho'o b'nois Yisrael perutzois b'kshofim. There was a terrible, widespread avera of kshofim, of magic, as it were. V'osa siyog l'sho'o. So he made a special siyog, a special fence, as it were, as a one-time event. Meaning here, it was not exactly the same avera. The Gemara later on will explain that even though it was all under the banner of kshofim, but there's different types of kshofim. We know the Torah talks about oiv and yidoini and all different types of magic or sorcery. So this was not one avera. And if it's not one avera, then the halacha is you can't kill more than one on the same day. And yet he did. V'talon lepirsuma lemilsa. But the reason why he hanged them all is in order to publicize this. V'don es kulam b'yom echad. And he quickly finished the case as soon as he could. Hanged them all on one day. Mipnei kroivehem. Because of the family members, shelo yiskashru la'atzilon. So that they shouldn't be mitkasher, they shouldn't group together to try and save them somehow. So he felt this was a necessary siog to hang them all on one day before the family would have a chance to save them. Therefore, what is the Mishnah telling us? That quite clearly this is exceptional circumstances anyway, because under ordinary circumstances, you cannot hang two people on the same day, and yet he did. So if he did, it was clearly a hiro'as shah. So for the same price, that's how he was able to hang even Noshim. But that's not a proof that that is the halacha under ordinary circumstances. It could well be that normally you do not hang Noshim. This was an exception.
Rabbi, isn't there a thing that in 70 years, the Sanhedrin only killed one person? So correct. How does this... So
yeah, correct. So this might, I guess, would also be part of the Hirasha. Yeah, very correct. Very correct. Very correct.
So what was your answer that what?
It's also part of the Hirasha. I mean, this was a one-time event. This was exceptional circumstances. He felt he needed to make a public statement against this widespread Avodah Zarah or Kshofim. But under ordinary circumstances, you're right, it was a very rare event. Okay, have a wonderful, wonderful.